What is up? It is Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? Yes, it is. We traveled yesterday, and I had the day off. I know you guys are traveling. It's Tuesday. Confirmed. It's episode 14 here for Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by guys who, I don't know how you guys did it, but like ninjas, managed to dodge a hurricane. You are here. You are alive. And here we are for tonight's show. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
What's up, Wheat?
Hello.
Hurricane was pretty weak sauce.
They said the night before it moved like 50 miles towards us, and there were being disaster warnings in New York and shit. And then it was just
over. There was a part of you guys that was kind of hoping that like the shit would hit the fan, wasn't there?
Absolutely. Oh hell yeah! After I lost the show, I was hoping the thing would be canceled.
Oh shit! Well, you know what. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Fortunately, you are all still here. We're going to be talking about MLG a little bit later. I traveled this weekend, too, and was at PAX. And, with that, I just would love to kind of just jump into things. We got a lot to talk about tonight. Definitely want to take as many calls as I can. Got some questions regarding the PTR patch notes. So I know none of us have played. As far as I know, right? It's not actually up yet. These are going to be. Is that accurate? Do you guys know?
No.
It's not up yet, right?
It's not? I thought it was.
I don't
know.
Is it now?
I haven't played it.
I think when the patch notes came out, it wasn't quite yet up yet.
Yeah, it wasn't now.
Okay. Going to talk a little bit about that. Jeff, I know you've probably been playing a ton of games on there, if you could.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Just check things out. But the first thing I want to talk about, guys, we chatted about it last week, and that was the Barcraft stuff. And this weekend, because I wasn't obviously at MLG with you guys, I got to go to Chow Bistro, where the first Barcraft took place, right? And it was amazing. I don't know. I really don't know what else to say about it. It was as cool as seeing all those people in an MLG event, you know, like cheering for the game and getting into it, except it was in a completely public environment. And, I know you guys have a lot of appreciation for just like how huge the MLG events are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we talked about how the Barcraft concept in itself is really quite like kick-ass.
Yeah, it's awesome.
From experience, I can tell you it was amazing. It was absolutely incredible. And
which one did you go to?
I went to Chow Bistro during PAX. It's on 1200 East Pike Street in Seattle.
Isn't that one of the originals?
It is like the original as far as I know. Like at least, you know, did a guy at a bar one time hook up a laptop to a computer and maybe watch something on what? Yeah, I'm sure. But this is the one that, you know, like fired up the Barcraft. They created some menus that have like, you know, Barcraft related items, etc. And it really was just awesome to see the community like enjoy it from that perspective. But let me tell you what the coolest fucking part was, right? Coolest part is sitting there drinking, watching StarCraft, and seeing people walk by and stop and kind of like look in amazement at what they were actually witnessing. It was pretty fucking badass, I won't lie. And I brought with me, because I'm not going to spend too much time on it, I could sit here and rant and rave about it. But the two Barcraft menus, I
did. It's kind of hard to see him.
Shit, Paydews. I didn't expect you to be able to read them. Fuck. I'm showing them to the camera that matter, actually. So they've got a drink menu. And now all of a sudden my wife's interested. A drink menu and a food menu. And I just want to like read you some of the items that you can order. So from the blue menu, You can get blue flame hellion roll, which is a spicy tuna roll with jalapeno, eel, and habanero peppers. You can get this is one of my favorite plates. It's called the Changeling, and it's 10 spicy hot wings with one hot wing that's coated in insanely spicy habanero sauce. So, like, you would eat them, and then there would be the one that would be, like, super fucking hot. Like, oh, my God, I want to die hot. They had a siege tank, which was, like, a full Kobe beef burger. Probes, which is my favorite. It was deep-fried tofu and, like, an orange garlic glaze. And, of course, this is an Asian, you know, bistro, so kind of all Asian-related. And they had Baneling Bombs, which was like edamame with serrano peppers and some other stuff. And that was, so the food was amazing. Here you go, honey, because I'm sure you're all stoked about that. Then they had the drink menu, right? Have you heard about this yet, Greg? Because you've got a drink on here.
Oh, boy.
All right.
I like a cackle before.
All right, so I'll... They've got the, let's see, I had the Stim Pack, like, all the time, which was a shot of Absolute Mandarin in Turbo Energy Drink or Red Bull. They had a Nuclear Launch, which was just a shot of sake dropped into a beer. An SCV was any canned beer. A Pylon was energy drink and vodka, which I thought was kind of funny. Then they have a proxy pylon, which is same as the regular pylon, but you have to find it. You know. They have a mule, which is ginger beer with vodka and lime when it says we needed a quick pick-me-up. And a Tychus Finlay, which is a massive 33-ounce can of beer. Then they had the Hydra GG that cost $1. And it was an empty shot glass, Idra.
Oh, that's
very funny. I don't know if anyone actually got it, but it's on there. And then they have the GG, which is vodka, rum, tequila, gin, blue Sarasso, and soda. So there you go. I want to give a shout out to the guys over at Chow Bistro, Hyung and Oscar. You guys are fucking awesome. If you live in Seattle and you haven't gone to this place, you're missing out. It's totally awesome. I think they do regular on Wednesday and Sunday, and then during live events they do it the whole time. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys have any questions about the event itself, but it was fucking sweet.
Sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, it was totally awesome. So if you have a chance to go to a BarCraft anywhere, do it, guys. Do it. It was amazing. It's totally cool. So I just wanted to kind of bring it up because we did talk about it last week. I went all three nights because it was that fucking awesome.
Pretty cool initiative that people are doing that. I think that's freaking awesome.
Yes. Totally awesome. Totally
bringing
awesome.
Their passion outdoors, man.
Dude,
one troll at a time.
I'm
one
telling you, man. People were getting shocked when they were walking by, and I guarantee you that we had, like, a couple Koreans walking by and at least, like, instantly just saw StarCraft on the wall and came in, like, when realizing what was going on inside. And that's pretty badass.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I give big props to all those. And I know, like, Edmonton had a huge one. London had a big one. A bunch in Texas had a big one. So, great job, guys. You're the bomb. Keep that shit up. That's totally, totally awesome. So with that being said, moving on, I want to talk about 1.4. You guys all have the notes in front of you by chance?
I do indeed.
Yeah.
I did put them in.
I have them now. Yeah.
In a friendly little email to you guys, and we'll check them out here on the stream as well. And before we talk about the balance, I want to talk about two notes real quick that we've actually bitched about here on the show before. We've discussed and we've talked about, and that being like the privacy settings and what people are able to do with you on Battle.net. I think Jeff, you and I specifically have talked about the whole all of a sudden being invited into fucking 18,000 chat channels against your will, and the privacy settings now say that you can set it to only allow friends to send you invites, only allow friends to send you chat messages, and I have to believe that only to send me invites also means like for chat rooms. It doesn't mention them there.
Better late than never. I'm gonna wait for this to go. I mean, it's kind of funny that it's in the PTR. Like,
yeah,
I really feel like it should just be implemented. And I don't quite understand the testing process. Like,
we have to go through an elaborate testing process.
Well, it did take them a year to develop. Sure. They want to make sure they get it right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been one of the bigger critics of the fact that this has been missing. But I'll tell you what, when that's gone, just like the trolls on Battle.net, I'll shut the hell up. You know, I just, better late than never, I'm really happy about it. I don't think people should be able to message you that you don't want to. There should be a way to stop them from doing that, and it seems that Blizzard's been listening. And he's going to go ahead and do that, so I really appreciate it, and I think it's good.
I know you guys have had problems with this pain user, even in probably casting it at IGN, right?
Oh, yeah. Just, like, random people message you all the time. And sometimes it's legitimate, but a lot of the time it's just, you know, it's just total nonsense. And it's a waste of everybody's time, and you can't prevent them from doing it, so it's like...
Did I see, like, in... the finals matchup, both players were using like LLLLLLL or like capitalized, just a bunch of like random fucking letters that like you couldn't even tell what character it was and how many there were. And I mean, that's pretty sad that we have to get to that point. It really is.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, people were like stalking players in our tournament and keeping track of their scores. We were using the cloaked maps, so they couldn't actually figure out exactly who won and who lost, but they were stalking their favorite players and keeping track of the scores. So if they saw like a best of five series, you know, and they kept track of White Raw's scores throughout the series, they could see, oh, he probably won game one, probably won game two. And that we had people map out the entire bracket based on looking at people's scores.
Now, did you ever have like in any sort of a live event, did you ever have this problem in NASL, Jeff? Like you were casting live and all of a sudden like, people would drag you into chat channels, and the client would lag and shit like that.
Well, Blizzard gave us free accounts, and as long as you didn't play any games on them at all, no ladder, no custom games, that kind of stuff, nobody on any friends list, except for the players from the NASL, it was actually quite hard for them to find out what was going on. But there was a few times little information's leaked, and then accounts were compromised, and people played games on the account anyways. So it just kind of gets out there. But for the most part, we actually avoided the malicious people. I think... tournament trolling and that kind of stuff is like bad, and I think the nice thing is that the community seems pretty unreceptive to it, so the few instances where that does happen, it doesn't get too widespread, like the one Painter's talking about. I never saw that. It never got to me. I think a lot of the people cared more about the results not getting spoiled, so for the people that did spoil it, it was pretty self-contained. But I think the biggest issue with this is just that if you're casting a replay or anything, they can load you up into five channels right away and start spamming messages, and you're lagging now.
Right.
And that affects you. Or if you're trying to do like an event or streaming, people will load you up into a channel like X is a douchebag or other, you know, really bad language. Or if a tournament doesn't have, you know, if they forget to put busy on for 1 second, someone messages them and 35,000 people are watching whatever, and it's like, yo, such and such is a douche, you know, something just kind of mean, and all of a sudden that's like what people are talking about instead of the tournament itself. So it's just, it looks bad for Battle.net and Blizzard, which was kind of weird for me. Like, I haven't cried myself into a pillow at any point in time because of what people have been messaging me, but every time it happens, Blizzard looks terrible.
I think that's actually a good point. Like, it's annoying. You know, it's annoying the way that people don't use their fucking blinkers when they're turning left or right in cars, you know. But it's, I mean, at least now it is getting fixed, and I agree that it is pretty embarrassing, you know, more from a Blizzard perspective. Yeah. So, guys, test that PTR server and, the chat messages, because I'm sure that's going to get a ton of play because, you know, we all cast tournaments on the PTR where, you know, it's needed most. And,
How about them balance changes, eh?
Yeah. So let's talk about the balance changes, and let me bring it up. We'll go ahead and we'll start with the most general balance change, and just kind of take it. Whoever wants to chat about it, the impact of it, especially. But unit vision up ramps has been reduced by one.
That's actually pretty big.
Now, does anyone want to just, like, throw out there, even from a theory perspective, like, why exactly you think maybe this is getting a modification?
Like, a huge issue is probably stalkers and the Blink Stalker. I think this affects them the most. It's going to be much more difficult to prod up a ramp and get sight of the high ground and then continually blink your stalkers in and out. I think it's going to affect PvP a lot, and it'll affect PvT a little bit when you're dealing with stalkers. But I think it's mainly centered around the stalker.
What do you?
I think this is the one that probably more than any of the others needs to be tested on the PTR, because from what I first took it to mean was that if you foregate someone and you put a pylon at the bottom of their ramp, if they force field the base of the ramp, you should not be able to warp in above that, because your vision should be restricted, which is a nice fix, because it basically meant that the foregate still happens all the time. I know they're still trying to mitigate the foregate, because it's still the thing to do in PvP, and they don't want that. They want to see a much more diversified mirror matchup.
What are your another thoughts, Greg? Yeah.
Another big thing from that is not Blink Stalker base. It's actually going to be quite a bit easier to keep Hellions from getting up into your main ZVT if you're depending on Spine Crawlers and Lings. Because what they do is they run the Hellions up long enough to make you engage. You get off the first shot and your Zerglings above the ramp, then they pull back. Now they have to go up a lot further and commit to it a lot more in order to do that.
That's true.
So that's going to help a lot for that, I think.
So, I mean, there is kind of a more... I mean, it's not necessarily aimed at one specific race. Each of you were able to talk about at least one instance where it would kind of benefit you or a racial matchup.
I think it's
99% focused on Blink Stalkers and warp-ins, but yeah, okay. it's going to have other consequences as well.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to make defensive play at the top of ramps just slightly easier for everyone, I think.
Which I think is better. I mean, mm-hmm. That was one of the things I thought was lacking in StarCraft 2, is that the ramp was just more of a narrowed space as opposed to a huge advantage like it was in Brood War. You could flat out miss shots in StarCraft 2 if you have sighting. The advantage is pretty minimal, so I like that there's this little added bonus to that as well.
You mentioned that you know, it's something that's going to need a lot of testing.
Ooh, I wonder if, I highly doubt this, but I wonder if it'll affect Colossus range up cliffs and ramps.
Why would it?
I don't know. It might affect Colossus up cliffs. If a Colossus is at the bottom of a cliff, can it still see as far as it could before? I mean a ramp, not a cliff.
I'd imagine so, because it's not affected by high ground or low ground, because it's counts as a flying unit for that.
Mm.
I don't think it would matter.
And, Jeff, you mentioned that it's something that's going to likely need to get tested. I mean, I think we all agree here, but the likelihood that it actually gets tested by the right people is...
non-existent.
It's kind of non-existent.
Yeah, I'm just more looking forward to seeing how it functions. I mean, a lot of times what we look at it and what we perceive the changes to be are very different from what ends up happening with things like this, because it's not quite so cut and dry.
All right. Let's move on to the ProDOS changes, since they're listed next. The Immortal attack range has been increased from 5 to 6.
Good God.
Yeah, I think that one's going to be removed solely because of PvT. Like, Immortal timings are going to be silly PvT now.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to be really good. Think?
Come on, Jeff.
I think that's far too severe of a prediction to make logically. Like, I fully anticipate it going in, and I fully anticipate it having a pretty dramatic effect in a matchup where Protoss have been struggling severely. I mean, get away from the 1-1 for a second, just look at raw stats in Korea. It's one of the most unwinnable matchups in the entire game. So Blizzard does feel like they have to do something. Whether that's right or wrong, you know, I'll let you decide. But increasing the Immortal range 1 is going to have a huge effect. In the early game of PvT in particular. So it definitely will get implemented because it's either that or something else. But something pretty severe has to change, because that matchup's been lacking pretty hard as of late.
Something else definitely has to change, but I think having them the same range as Marauders is going to be too much.
Yeah, it's going to be insane. Just, I mean, people are already using Sentry Immortal builds really effectively, and I think given the plus one range bonus, it's just going to be absolutely ridiculous. Just the ability to just segment the army and then pick and choose with immortals with that kind of range is going to be insane. We're going to see so many like gateway immortal builds into Colossus, like, you know, three immortals before Colossus with like a really hard timing push, and I think it'll even affect ZVP as well too, if people are still using the mass roach style. I think it'll be really, really good for Toss.
Force field immortal is going to be really strong.
Yeah.
Two base all-ins with immortal support are a really strong PvZ. It's like all TT1 does, and that'll get better. But I it's going to be a lot more important in PvT than PvZ, I think.
You'll see a lot of them, too. I mean, be prepared for that. I mean, that's one of the biggest effects from these patches. It's not necessarily the direct change, which I'm sure in this case will be quite strong, and you will feel it for sure. I'm not trying to take away from that. But for me, the biggest change is usually people just get attention drawn to it. So the Immortal is a unit that kind of ebbs and flows out of fashion. Like, I see it, and then I don't see it forever, then I see it.
Right.
I think after this patch, you're going to see a ton of it.
Right. You actually make a really good point. Now, let me ask you this question, guys, because we've never seen... Well, actually, I take that back. I think there's been one thing with... I want to say it was with the bunker, but I don't think we've seen too many things go into the PTR and not come out of it. What was it? There was... Was it a...
Infestors no longer hitting air, or fungal no longer hitting air was taken out. There have been
right,
a few.
Right, right. Okay, so a few things. Do you guys see this as one of those potentials? Because, you know, I mean, there's a part of me that would go back to what Jeff said in that, you know, the Immortal, for as cool of a unit it is as it isn't as common as, you know, obviously a lot of the other units that are available to the Protoss and kind of what we see. And with that, and as a result... It did kind of hit the effectiveness of other units as well. Like, I remember during the beta where there was actually PvPs that consisted of, like, one Protoss going Immortal and the other one having a few Phoenix to lift up said Immortals to try, you know, like... And I haven't seen anything like that in forever. You said it might be a little too severe to say it's automatically going to be bad, Jeff. What do you think is going to, like, help, you know, say this is a proper change or this still needs some modification?
Well, I think that the PTR, and to your point, it's really important. I mean, maybe I was a little bit too severe when I said that it absolutely will get implemented, because you guys are absolutely right. Things have been removed. There is a precedent for that. Whether or not the Immortal is going to be overpowered and as it functions in the game, I guess what I was more voicing towards is I'm a little bit uncomfortable saying that, because... I do think they're strong. I do think certain builds and timings with the Immortal are still strong, even without this change. And, of course, when they get plus one more range, they're going to be just stronger. But I don't know that it's going to tip the scales dramatically in favor of Protoss winning everything all of a sudden. It just means that certain playstyles for the Terran and Zerg are probably going to have to change just a little bit. Zerg far and away less than Terran. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, because, like I said, and I'd be interested to hear either of these guys dispute this, the Protoss are doing statistically worse than everybody else. And so that's why we're looking at a patch where there's buffs to Protoss and nerfs to the other races for the most part. Once we get to the Ultra Self-Raving or change, we can talk about that too. But this is a Protoss patch, so I think it's pretty indicative that something has to change.
I think it's more of an anti-Terran patch than a Protoss patch, because Protoss got Blinkstalkers nerfed as well. Zerg got Overseer buff. I consider 50 guests a buff, plus the Ultralisk buff.
I'll tell you what, though, I don't know. I don't know that I would call the blink a nerf. Like, slowing down that upgrade, I don't know that there's too many builds that are, like, really dependent on hitting that ultra-fast blink upgrade. Like, it slows...
Trying to punish guestless expansion versus Terran, and then just the one base all-in versus Zerg. I think it pretty much nullifies both of those.
Which it gives you a lot more time to
prepare.
Yeah,
but the one base all-in versus Zerg is, like, once in every 100 games, and then... Mm-hmm. The Blinkstalker one base versus Terran is a really bad counter to the 1-1-1.
No,
and that's all that you see it.
To punish gashless expansion, I mean, from Terran.
It's still very rare. Uh-huh. Most people one gate expand against gashless expansion as opposed to go like, oh, he gashless expanded, then I go fast Blinkstalkers. That's not what people are saying or doing.
I see it a fair bit, but it's more like kind of it's gimmicky. It's not like a good follow up to Terran gashless FE, but a lot of people try and like. So blink up your ramp or sight the high ground with a pylon and then just like warp a ton of units up into your main and blink up into your main, but it's super all in. But
I would tell you it's like 85% for PvP and then 15. Like they're not going to make a whole patch to patch one base blink stalker against Zerg.
Yeah. Hellions are still going to two hit every mining unit.
Well, let's not jump around far yet, Painius.
Yeah. Son of a bitch. Look at you go.
Hold on,
how can you start talking about the Hellion? I know you're a Terran, but for Christ's sakes, we have to talk about the Mothership Acceleration, man.
cares about the mothership?
I mean, whoa!
They're going to become, like, standard in PvZ now.
Yeah.
They're already pretty good PvZ.
Dude.
Anyways.
They're already used by a lot of people late game. I think they'll just be used a lot more now. Because they're actually decent. Always been good.
I guess we're done with the Blink Stalker one.
No, I want to go back to the Blink Stalker for a sec, because we didn't actually... User. I know, right? But before we do, I will just kind of LOL at the fact that the engine, I guess, is fragile enough in StarCraft II that the only way they could fix the cloaking field lagging people's computers was to only allow a certain amount of units to get cloaked, which I just think is fucking hilarious. Like, was there ever a change in Brood War that was made because of the graphical limitations of people's computers?
No. Well, the game was made for calculators, so. No,
exact, right? So.
That's still kind of crazy, though, to implement balance changes based on computer performance.
It's so fucking insane, dude. And I mean, like, I have a pretty beast box, and I lag, you know? So, I mean, it'll likely alleviate that. And I doubt, you know, there's ever a major fight at a Nexus where a mothership pops, and, like, that would. You know, the difference between getting the first 25 units or, like, the whole army would actually make a difference in the battle. But I just thought that was funny. So you guys started talking about the Stalker. Let's just define it a little bit. The research time is increased from 110 to 140. And to continue in the conversation, Jeff, you brought out some specific examples versus Terran. What do you think about what people are saying and that they really feel like the biggest impact, aside from even what Idra mentioned, what Pain User mentioned, is going to be in PvP itself?
Well, I mean, I was interested that there was a debate on that, because honestly, the only time the speed of which you get Blink is affecting any game is in PvP when one guy is Blink and the other guy doesn't, you know? Like, he opened Blink instead of Observer, and the other guy went Observer instead of Blink, and then all of a sudden he's just able to outmaneuver those Stalkers, and that's game. We actually saw that this past MLG a few times. I believe Nanima beat Huck doing that, if I'm remembering correctly. So I think it's interesting that they want to kind of mitigate that and play away from that, because I didn't know that was necessarily a problem, but I guess that's not the play style that Blizzard wants to be seeing in that matchup. And then to their point, I mean, you do have a one base all-in Blink Stalker against Zerg, and then you do have the Tal'Darim games where people are going Blink Stalker one base versus Gasless Expand Terran. You could probably call that the Combat X patch. But aside from that, I mean, it's PvP for sure.
All right, so a chat question here. Will the plus one range immortals make Blink a little bit less effective? So will that also play into it?
Absolutely.
All right. I mean, okay. There you go. Chat.
I mean, people already use Immortals defensively in PvP if they're not going Blink, and they're just going to be that much better at holding the top of the ramp. Combine that with the -1 range for units, -1 vision for units going up ramp. Couple that with the Immortals +1 range, and defensive Immortal play is going to be really, really good in PvP. I mean, they're not going to be able to break your ramp. So,
yeah, I mean, we're already seeing the Blink Stalker Charge Lot Archon Immortal composition, and I think with this emphasis on the Immortal, you'll see, because the unit of that composition that sometimes slides out is the Immortal, I think we'll just see more of them. So it's going to be kind of cool. I think the Immortal change is a severe look at PvZ, PvT, and then it's going to have nice implications for PvP, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think, I think that comes third, though, in their considerations for what they want to change.
The thing I'm super worried about is early game TVP. Like, I feel like if a Protoss player is hitting an Immortal timing as is anyway, you have to play this super defensive style and put up like 3, maybe 4 bunkers and have SCVs like ready to repair ahead of time on auto repair. I feel like with the +1 range, it's going to be super, super dicey. You're going to have to play like this ultra defensive style, like 5 bunkers, super heavy on Marines. I'd just be really interested to see how it works out before I like label it as overpowered, but I think it's going to be really, really strong.
Just like to throw it out there, like what is your preferred method for dealing with immortals? I mean, or are you typically
Marines and bunkers? Like a lot of Marines. You need like 4 wrecks just pumping Marines. If you're like gasless expanding or something like
now,
that.
Now, bunkered Marines will still range an immortal, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It'd be equal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think 6 versus 6.
You know, and one of the, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but one of the other reasons why it seemed like the immortal range upgrade happened was just because the arc of the stalker often allowed the immortal to be 100% ineffective in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's accurate, right? So now.
Yeah, I agree.
They were a bad unit for the most part. I mean, actually, Blizzard has come out and said that they're not functioning the way they want them to, but what I mean by they're a bad unit is the way they function in the Protoss composition, like, has been pretty ineffective. They don't scale up very well for their cost because of their low attack rate. No, I'm not asking for them to attack faster. Please don't hear me saying that because I don't think it would be fair. But with this +1 range increase, the idea is that force fields, but also the blocking of their fellow units, won't make them a dance act in the back of the army, which is what they do right now.
So anyone want to make any other comments on Blink? What they think might happen, what they think about the change. Done? Okay. Let's talk about the Warp Prism then. This is actually one of those changes that I'm kind of excited. I won't lie. I'll tell you why I'm excited. I'm excited from a casting perspective. You know, I want to hear from the playing perspective, but from a casting perspective, I felt like the Warp Prism, because of how fragile it is, has been a, you know, underutilized unit. Shields are being increased from 40 to 100. Your guys' thoughts on A, now having to deal with that, and B, Jeff, the usage of it.
I think as far as killing the Warp Prism itself, this is going to be a pretty big problem for Zerg in particular. I think the Queen was really your only reliable answer about the Warp Prism, and with its health relatively low like that, the Queen was a reasonable response to that. But now with 60 more shield, Zergs are going to be having pretty tenacious Warp Prisms moving around, which I think makes that matchup a little bit harder for them. And then against Terran, it's nice. I mean, I think everyone agreed that the Warp Prism was pretty weak. Whether or not it needed 60 more shields will have to be one of those things tested in the PTR, because that's huge. That's like...
It's a big deal.
I think they missed. I would have loved it if, like, Stalkers got 60 more shields or something. I'm joking, of course. But
yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's going from a unit that everyone's like, oh, it's pretty weak, to, like, wow, that's a really
decent dropship.
It's a buff dropship now. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Not only that, once it deploys, it puts X amount of gateways in your main.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big deal. It's not just a dropship. It's like a dropship on steroids.
Yeah, it's going to be silly strong. Just in general, if you get the speed upgrade, it's really fast. And then the usability of it, it's better than the other transports because
Not
only can you drop, you can then warp in, and you can keep warping in until you take it out. Yeah. But especially for Zerg, because Hydras and Corruptors, our actual anti-air, are by far our worst units. Everyone would agree with that. And you basically don't make them versus Protoss anymore. You're depending on Infestors and Queens for your anti-air.
Yeah.
And it's really, really, really inefficient to take down one unit at a time with Infestors. And Queens, they just don't have the DPS to take that down, and they're Sloth Creep anyway. So that's going to be a really big problem for Zerg.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, from a Zerg perspective, I could certainly feel you, Idra, on that. And even, Jeff, you mentioned that it's probably going to be most difficult for the Zergs to deal with as well. However, I won't lie, I'm excited to see at least how it changes what the Protoss can do as far as their own utility, because it can be one of the deadliest things that I've ever seen in a game, and I'm pretty sure that each of you have been
late-game
of it.
Late-game War Prism is sick.
Well, once again, I think it's going to be that emphasis thing. So the fact that it's getting any kind of boost at all means that there's going to be 2,000 kids out there who have never made a War Prism or are now starting to make them. And we're going to see some pretty cool application just because there's more, quote-unquote, scientists out there working with the unit, seeing
sure.
how it functions.
Sure.
Whether or not it needs, like I said, 60 more health, I don't know. Because that makes it a fragile unit against Zerg to a nearly indestructible one. So we'll have to see if that's too much.
So
like, Vikings will still be able to clean it up with Terran, and you're going to have Vikings anyway. But even the extra 60, it might give them enough time to, you know, deploy and warp in three DTs that they couldn't get in beforehand. So it seems like they might be able to just brute force warp units into your base, even if you're prepared for it, even if you have a Viking on patrol over said airspace, and they just dive right in on your natural and deploy and warp stuff in. They might have enough HP just to do it.
You'll get absolutely no sympathy from me about Terrans having to deal with drops. if they have to deal with drops all of a sudden, then I'll play the world's smallest violin for them. But other than that, man.
I'm going to be with you on that one.
See?
I will be
sorry.
With you.
I don't know. Warp Prism DTs is pretty tough to deal with. It's hectic.
I know. It's almost as bad as six Marines and a Marauder versus anything.
Yeah, it must be rough with Insta scans. Must be rough. Pain user.
Pain user's like, I'm in a dark alley.
I just need an I hate DTs shirt sport right now.
It will be tough. I think. I mean, to your point, you're absolutely right. There will be more DTs in Terran bases. It will make it more difficult, yes. But I would rather have Protoss players working through strategies like Warp Prism to DT to drop in the base and giving the Terrans a little bit more of a complicated game than what we have been seeing, which is make four Colossus off of two bases, as many stalkers as I can, and try to win the game. And I'd like to see more diversified play. I think the Warp Prism encourages multitasking and APM, and I think that's a good thing.
Now, someone in chat in Purview said, guys, I think you maybe might be overreacting a little bit. Like, let's look at the Nidus, where, you know, a Zerg can get an army into a player's base. And it's like, well, you know what? The moment the Warp Prism can be killed with fucking SCV probes or fucking drones, then maybe we can have that discussion.
Nidus is also very, very expensive on both ends.
Dude, you can't drop a Nidus without it getting seen unless it's in a completely inappropriate part of the map that doesn't matter anyway.
That's inappropriate part of the map.
Yes, like they're spawning up here, right? And you're like, okay, well, I'm gonna drop a Nidus up here because he actually won't kill it with his fucking workers. Anyway,
I like the way it works. The only thing, I mean, we're going on a little bit of a tangent, but my point, real quick. I wonder why they changed it from having like the Nidus in Brood War, where all of a sudden an army appears, like it has a exit point of the entire circumference of the Nidus, as opposed to now, which is one unit at a time. I wonder if they've tested that out and it was just too broken or something, because
your whole fucking army just fires out.
Yeah. It's probably because everything drops creep now, whereas in Brood War, if you wanted to be frickin' cute, which I did a lot of the times, I would drop a drone, build a hatchery, then make a Nidus worm, or a Nidus network, excuse me. And all of a sudden, they'd have a Nidus network in the back of their base, but they also have a hatchery, so they're like, you son of a bitch, you invested so much money in this. It's cool.
Yeah, it's rough. Anyway, since the Nidus actually doesn't get touched this patch, we'll go ahead and lay off. We're going on to the Terran now. And I heard that when this was actually announced, that Pain User and many other Terrans across the world were going with the collective, huh?
There's a disturbance in the force.
There is a disturbance. The build time for the wax has been increased.
You guys think I'm like this corporate
Terran monster? You're the
Terran,
of course.
I'm okay with it. At the end of the day, unless my math is incorrect, two Hellion streams will still two-hit worker lines.
No, they don't. Not on upgraded.
They're talking about the barracks.
They still do two Hellions still do 50.
I thought
correct?
We were talking about the barracks. Why do you want to skip it?
I don't know what the numbers are. That's definitely not true. Unupgraded blue Hellions don't do shit.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about blue flame Hellions.
No, unupgraded blue Hellions without the armory upgrades. They three shot workers now.
I thought that two would still one
what is
shot
going on?
A worker line.
All right.
They do what?
I guess the
they
guy
instead
can
of
outrage,
instead
yeah.
of two doing 30 apiece.
All right, let's just go with the
Hellion
for right now.
Correct.
I don't know what the fucking numbers are, but they definitely three shots now.
Really?
Yep.
Oh well, that just rocked my whole world because I thought they were still going to do 50, which would still two shot workers. But if they don't, that's, I think, a necessary change either way. I'm not a big fan of units that are able to clear out an entire mineral line in, like, a split second. I think it's super gimmicky, and it kind of ruins TVT. I like to play, like, a more straight-up TVT, and if you leave your base for 2 seconds and Blue Flame Hellions get in, you can lose your entire mineral line in the blink of an eye. It's pretty stupid. It's super positional based, and I don't know how much that applies to Zerg and Toss. I think it happens sometimes if people open up with Blue Flame Hellions or something like that, but you don't see it nearly as much. And then the racks, I'm cool with that. I feel like two racksing against Zerg early game is super strong. Even if it doesn't outright kill them, it just forces them to make a lot of lings, and you have the potential to do serious damage, and if they make even a slight mistake, you can do a lot of damage, and they have to build a spine crawler and all kinds of other stuff. So they're going to have more time to deal with it, which I think is good for Zerg and good for the metagame.
So would anyone disagree with the concept of it still allows the blue flame to be devastating, but it kind of gives whoever's being dropped at least a window to react so that the game's not just over?
It's a tiny little bit less devastating for a little while, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this will have the desired effect they want. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but I mean, I think a huge part of the problem is, I guess they're targeting two Hellions pretty good, but I think four get in your base and they still just torch up absolutely everything, like absolutely everything.
Well, yeah.
So I was more interested in them perhaps doing something like the radius or range or type of damage that it did or something. But
so Hellions currently do 30 with Infernal Pre-Igniter, yes? 20 plus 10?
Sure.
Yes, I believe that's right.
So they're decreasing it from 10 to 5. So they'll do 25 apiece. So two Hellions firing will still do 50 damage to light, which will still two hit.
Everyone on the forums that says gonna two shot now, and everyone on the chat was saying I was right, so I'm just gonna go with that.
Well, I'm trying to do the numbers
real
quick.
What's base damage?
20.
Then it is plus 10 with blue flame.
So if they half that, two Hellions will still do 50 damage, which will kill any mining unit in two shots.
They're saying the base is 14 in chat.
Oh, okay.
14 plus 5. 24 or something.
Okay, well there you go. So it'll three-hit mining units, which is a necessary big change. If you split all your workers apart, they'll take so much less damage than they currently do. I think it's going to affect TVT more than anything, though. And TVZ as well.
Yeah, I think they three-shot Marines now, too. So that'll be big, because they still two-shot Lings.
So you might see a resurgence in bio and TVT. That's definitely possible. Stray away from that all-mech style that we see right now, which is cool, but it's largely centered around the Blue Flame Hellion.
Well, and then plus one basically makes it what it would be now, or close to.
Yeah.
It makes them two-shot workers.
Two shots. Something to think about. Idra or In Control, do you have any thoughts on just the necessity for the nerf?
I think, I don't know, that was a weird way to go about it, because the real problem with Hellions, given that they're supposed to be a harass unit, they're always going to be pretty good versus workers. The real problem is just how cheap they are and how strong they are. It's actually really hard to kill Hellions. They have a lot of HP. They don't cause any gas. Minerals, they're fast.
They're good. They're very underused.
They're still going to deal a lot of damage, post-nerf or not, and they're still going to be really fast. They're still going to be really cheap. They're going to be really hard to kill.
They're light units, right? Light mechanical?
Yeah.
So well, I think that's kind of that's interesting because I don't know. I guess from a Protoss perspective, it would be the Stalker that you want to kill the Hellion, but it does ridiculously bad damage against the Hellion, so it actually takes a lot of shots to stop it from doing stuff.
I'm pretty sure Hellions actually trade cost-effectively with Stalkers in big numbers.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous.
I know. I'm supporting your argument.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure. I actually had a guy double reactor Hellion against me on Taladrum Altar, and I was like, wow, this is really weird. He must just really want to get my mineral line. But then he just tore up my whole army with just straight up Hellions. I was like, something's not right here. But I think to echo Greg's sentiment, and I'm a little bit upset because I think he stole this idea from me, but it's possible he's a really smart guy. He might have thought of it himself. We'll have to wait and see. I think I want the Hellion to cost a little bit of gas. Nothing too expensive, but
like 25.
I think, 25, 50. 50 might be too much. I don't know.
25 gas is pretty legit, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think that is... is there anything unfair with that?
I'd rather just have them have less HP, because they just do not die right now. Not for Zerg, at least.
I think one thing we can all agree on is that they just need to have a little bit more of a risk to their reward. Like right now,
yeah,
it's worth a Terran's money every single time to just dive bomb in there. Because if two of them make it in, as it stands right now, they're going to torch up the whole mineral line.
Yeah,
if
two of them make it in on one of the five raids, it's worthwhile.
Exactly, and that's the issue, I think. I mean, I've seen too many games where it's like one guy is dominating the other guy, and this could be a TVT, so I'm not even complaining from a Protoss perspective or a Zerg.
Yeah.
But the other guy gets in two lucky Hellions, and literally, the game's over because you have nothing now. I've seen this happen to Demuslim numerous times, and you know, again, I'll take my bias hat off. I've seen it happen to everybody, so it's not like it's just him. So changing it to do three shots now, does that really change that kind of severe luck factor that the Hellions still exist with and the lack of risk there? I don't think so. So I'm still I'm a little bit pessimistic with this change, and I would like to see them reevaluate it with a different angle.
I think it changes it drastically. It just gives you so much more time to spread all your SCVs out. You'll take so much less damage than your SCVs getting two hit, or probes, or drones, what have you. It just gives you a lot more time, and I think the overall damage of a specific raid, if you will be way, way like reduced. It's not even going to be close. It'll still be really good, but it's not going to be like it was.
All right, guys, we need to take a really, really quick break. But over the break, I want you to contemplate this suggestion that the chat made. Someone says, would it make any difference if the blue flame damage was actually reduced based off of the range from which it is, the range in which it hits? So consider that. We've also got to talk about the Raven changes, all the Zerg changes, and we'll be back with that and a lot more after this break. Don't go away. Don't worry, we'll talk about the barracks. Painters is the one that keeps on trying to ignore that whole thing. So
what? Didn't I just 2 seconds ago explain how it's a good thing for TVZ and how the T-Rex won't be as strong?
Like, it'll be a good thing, Hellions, Blue Flame Hellions, Hellions.
I don't know. Hellions.
I swear to God, that's how it happened. Anyway, we left with the chat suggestion. They said, what if the damage on the blue flame actually got lesser the further out that it was?
That's too weird.
Or would it be like, man.
Yeah, one of the cooler parts of the Hellion is lining up targets so you get maximum damage. And
isn't that just rewarding, like, the bad pathing of...
No.
It's an interesting individual gimmick for the game. Like, there's no other unit that has that ability or that, like, that idea. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I hate to, you know, obviously I came up with an idea, so I'm like, well, I think my idea is the best idea ever. But I just think there should be more risk to the reward. cost, gas, less health, something, so that they can't, they have fewer opportunities to get in there and get lucky.
Okay. Raven, and then we'll talk about their axe. Seeker missile movement speed has increased from 2.5 to 2.953. I love this change, man.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. Keep them coming. Increase its radius as well.
I mean, does anyone not? Is anyone... Wait, its radius, like its blast radius?
Hell yeah, dude.
Fuck, man.
You remember those things in the fucking beta? They'd blow up like half the goddamn screen. What happened to that?
Yeah.
I want Seeker missiles.
I hope people found out about Marauders, Pain User.
What happened to that?
And then they found out about charge lots.
This guy.
And now Marauders have vanished off the face of the earth.
This guy. What? What did you do? Pain User, I'm charge afraid for your integrity as a commentator on the game.
Charge lots greater than Marauders.
This guy. I'm glad I can hear you smiling.
I'm cheesing.
Your cam's not working for me now, but...
I know.
My
Marauders are pretty good, man. And if for one moment you're feeling like they're not, I need you to give me a call. Call me up in the middle of the night and be like, Jeff,
I didn't say
I don't think the Marauders are good unit.
Charge lots are like the hard counter to Marauders. And they are. They wreck Marauders. Marauders are good. Don't get me wrong. They absolutely molest Stalkers and Roaches. It's disgusting. But charge lots take no damage from them, and they slice them into little Marauder bits.
Indeed.
They do. So,
but he keeps trying to get away from this barracks. Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about the
damage. Hey, I don't know what you're trying to hide over there.
We're going to talk about it.
We're going to plow through it. Greg, tell me about the barracks, because I feel like it makes you happy in the pants.
Kind of does. Two racks is pretty silly. Foreign turns actually don't use it that much, but you look at Koreans, Lucira actually goes to like 14 hatch, 14 pull every game, and still loses his hatch rate to bunker rushes half the time. And people don't even proxy Rex that much, and proxy Rex is just, like, undefendable with hatch first. Two Rex is really good. This is going to slow it down a little bit. I think it honestly would have been better if they had addressed Marines instead of Barracks. You're just like...
Hang on. He's just got his arm stuck in the trash compactor.
I don't know what that is.
I was thinking he was just getting... He's getting, like, more and more pissed off at what Andrew was saying.
Shaking
just, like,
his whole desk.
We can't see the cam, yeah. So he's just like, ah, God.
Yeah, let's talk about the barracks. I do feel like the Blue Flame Hellion needed a slight nerf. I think... Remember what they did in the patch? The radius? Anyways... I think this is actually a very small, full-on Terran nerf. Like, everything gets slowed down just a little bit. The amount of time it takes them to get their mule going. Just the... Like, if they're going mech and they lose their barracks, it'll take them 5 more seconds to make that barracks. But yeah, I really feel like this is a TVZ nerf, so I was pretty happy about that.
I was pretty stoked, too. I mean, honestly, just having an extra 5 seconds to, like, annoy some dude's SCV as well. And, I mean, I know that doesn't come into play as much for, you know, you guys, although I still occasionally see some crazy harassment and even some kills in that regard. But from a ladder perspective, too, I actually do think it's a pretty good change. And I don't think it's drastic enough that I'm not sure that anyone is really up in arms about it. But to be fair, I'm not sure that I have actually done due diligence to find out if the internet is in an uproar over this.
The only complaint I've seen about it is Terran saying that it's going to make Terran versus proxy gateways really, really hard. Which I suppose could be true. I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of true. Those 5 seconds are pretty critical. But, I mean... I don't know. Proxy gating is... it's retarded anyway. If you can still get the bunker up in time, you'll be okay.
Mesa brings up a good point. That the barracks change misaligns the orbital command / marine timing by 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's okay. There's plenty of Zerg builds where you have to sacrifice either drone timing or get your queen a little bit later and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, I mean, at first I was like, dude, the Terran's missing a whole SCV, and then I remembered they had mules.
God forbid, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what, I think that's okay. I think maybe they can just squeeze out. Now orbital's on 16 instead.
Yeah, whatever. That's fine.
We'll see. 5 seconds. It's like 5 blizzard seconds, too. So it's
Well, it's 5 in-game seconds. That's only, what, like 3 and 3.5 or something real seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not
that
long.
I think it just helps the double barracks, like the proxy or something. In all seriousness, like I couldn't imagine someone else making a bigger argument from this.
Yeah. It's all about the two racks.
If it was like 10 or 15 seconds, then of course I think it would be like a...
That would be ridiculous.
Full Terran nerf, like some kind of, something severe happening here. But as it is, this just simply slows down the 11-11 racks, which gives you like 3 or 4, you know, 5 extra seconds to get your drones in the proper place so they can get like 1 extra mineral or something like that each.
All right, let's, I mean, any other thoughts on the racks?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to have, like, a crazy overall effect on the game.
Okay. Let's move on to Zerg changes, then. We've talked a ton about these. I didn't actually think we'd spent this much time on it, but I still want to talk about Rally, and we only have about half an hour left. So, Zerg changes now. First and foremost, the fungal growth damage has changed from 36.
Fungal growth.
Fungal growth, man. Has changed from 36 to 30, and then 40 versus armored instead of 30% versus armored.
Which ended up being like 47 or 48 or something. So, yeah, it's just a little straight damage nerf. The biggest change is going to be versus Marine Medevac, because originally Fungal out-DPS Medevac's healing rate. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, but it's going to be a lot closer now. So that'll be pretty big. But against Protoss, I think someone went through, and every gateway unit still dies in the same number of fungals if you chain them. So it's not actually a gigantic nerf. Yeah.
I mean, obviously you've got to be happy, Jeff, considering the...
I was really pissed off with what they did to Marine Medevac. I think when the fungal growth hits those Marines and Medevacs, just didn't feel right. Didn't feel right. So I'm glad that they took the time to approach that.
Well, I'm sure it was supposed to be a general nerf. They just didn't do it very well.
They missed.
They missed.
They missed.
And it's funny, too, because one of the other ideas they were tossing around is, like, so severe. Like, oh, fungal doesn't affect air units.
Severely retarded. Yeah, like, there's no way that could ever happen.
That should have never left the building, but it did. So now we heard about it. Now it's kind of like, are those, like, it's akin to me being like, you know, boxing's kind of imbalanced, so we're thinking about changing the gloves to 13.3 ounces. But then also, we're thinking about having them fight underwater. So we're going to figure out which one we want to implement. And it's like, you know, how do you miss the mark that severely, and then how do you come so short on the other one?
Hmm. Were we talking about the Infestor nerf?
Yeah, we were.
No, it's Blue Flame Alien again.
We're talking about the Infestor. Yeah.
I just think that it was too good all along as an ability that Zerg can kind of just throw out there, whether it's against Toss or against Terran. If you get a decent-sized ball of Infestors, it's just one of those abilities that you can repeatedly spam before a big fight, and then you can also spam it during a big fight to restrict mobility and do damage during the entire fight. And I think as an ability that you can just kind of throw out there, like EMP, and it also has like a radius
like
as well.
EMP?
Yeah, EMP is one of those abilities that you can just throw out there pre-fight or during fight that's also really good. And in that genre of spells, I think that Fungal was just way too powerful.
Thoughts on that, Idra?
It was like the one thing we had that could kill units. But like I said, I don't think this is going to be a gigantic nerf, so I'm okay with it.
It should make everyone happy.
Well, I don't know. I'm not. I mean, I hope they continue to look at it, or... You know, perhaps there just has to be more development in the metagame, but as it is right now, the Infestor's just never a bad idea. Like, it's the perfect defensive unit, and it's fantastic offensive. All three of its spells are three of the most powerful spells in the game. The Infested Terran, Neural Parasite, and Fungal Growth. Like, it's one of those units where it's just such a ridiculously good idea to go as fast as you possibly can.
That's true. It's kind of like the way the Colossus used to be for Protoss, where you have Colossus because they are absolutely so much better than everything else. I'd agree that the Infestor on its own would be overpowered, but if you look at how shit the rest of Zerg units are, like, you literally can't make Hydras of Corruptors or you lose. And Roaches are limited, and Zerglings are good in their role, but really bad in everything else. I mean, you have to have Infestors be that good or Zerg doesn't win.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think the Corruptor is a unit that they might have. I think I've even heard that they're going to scrap it in Heart of the Swarm because I think it's just a messed up unit. Like
what?
It's just too.
Wait, scrap what?
The Corruptor.
The Corruptor, like remove from the game or revamp it.
It's extremely hardy, and it's got a really low attack rate, but it's also expensive and it's kind of a supply suck.
Yeah.
And its role is very specific. It's only anti-air, and then it has like an okay spell. So it's just all across the board kind of weird. It's either too strong, too weak, too expensive, or drastically overcasted for its role.
Right? It's super, super, super situational.
Well, and it how would you generate Broodlords if you took the Corruptor out of the
Beautilus.
Game?
Yeah, that's what it was in Broodlord.
Okay.
But, like, at least with Vikings, you can land after a battle, and they have, like, some use beyond.
You
can
just give Corruptor a decent spell, like back when they had the original Corruption that disabled buildings. I suppose that was too powerful, but you could tweak the map.
So good.
But they actually had a purpose after they killed all the air units.
Like I said, I just think they messed it up too much. Like, it would just have to be, you just rename it.
Yeah.
Unless you could have it dive into water and then shoot space sharks. If it could do that, cool.
It'd be good to go. Okay. And while we are talking about the Infestor, it's also been said it wasn't in the balance changes. I believe it's in the general changes. But now when you use Neural Parasite, a unit keeps its upgrades, which, to be completely honest, I did not even know that it didn't.
Yeah, I had no idea.
So,
that's just a fix.
Yeah, I think that's what I think. That is more of a fix than anything. But
I heard they also fixed Guardian Shield.
Did they fix SCVs repairing themselves in bunkers?
Yes.
Like the one SCV repairing itself in bunkers?
Yes, yes.
Wanted to punch a Muslim every time he did that.
Did you hear that, though? The Guardian Shield actually didn't help you against certain things.
What do you mean? Like what?
Tank Fire did nothing against.
Guardian Shield?
And there's a few others. I can't remember. But yeah, the Guardian Shield just flat out didn't function against certain things like it was supposed to. So they just kind of snuck it in there in the patch notes. So like...
Wow.
Six Guardian Shield for you.
Did you notice that?
I didn't, no.
It'd be impossible to notice something like that.
Yeah.
Unless you're just like...
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Watching the hit
not
points.
Impossible. BattleNet and the people that use this always... I always find somebody that's like, I was doing some testing and I found this and it's like, fucking hell, man. We're crazy. You're crazily awesome. Like, some of the stuff people found. It's really
mm-hmm.
It's wild. It's wild what they find. Overseer. Morph cost decrease from 50-100 to 50-50, but contaminate energy cost increase from 75 to 125. You mentioned earlier, Idra, that you were actually okay with this upgrade, just 50 less gas.
Yeah, it's a buff.
I've been saying all along that every race needs better, earlier, more efficient scouting, and this is a step towards that. Up in contaminate.
I totally agree with that statement across the board.
Up and contaminate is just because it takes 3 overseers to completely shut down a building, like, continually, off of 75 mana. And at 50-50, it would just be way too easy to get to that. And I don't know about the other races, but CVZ would become really, really weird. Because if you can completely shut down a hatchery, it makes timings really powerful.
Right. I agree with everything here. I think it's awesome. I think the Infestor was a... Or not the Infestor, excuse me. The Overseer was an oddly underused unit as it was, but I think partly that was because of its gas. So to lower it, I think that's a pretty smart move by them. And I'd like to see more of it. I think it's good.
With just the cost of it, do you think it's going to offset lair timings at all, just being as a way to scout quicker?
What do you mean?
Like quick lair off 2 base into quick
overseer
builds?
Yeah, like a really, yeah. Just for like as quick of scouting as possible? No?
I don't think so. Going lair that quick leaves you really vulnerable to something in every matchup.
Okay.
I like where you're going with it, Wheat, though. I think more Zerg should do that.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the reason why I even brought it up was because one thing we didn't talk about was Zerg scouting versus Terran is going to kind of suck a little bit because a lot of times you could at least peek maybe one additional building past their axe. And if you're losing that one site, then it seems like that's going to, you know...
Well, you couldn't do that until you were already up the ramp, so that's not going to change. It's just going to be harder to get vision of their wall without dying to the Marines.
Gotcha. Okay. And finally, the Ultralisk build time decrease from 70 to 55. And as we were casting last week for the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup, I was talking about the patch notes to Idra, and he's like, "Well, too bad that's not the problem with the Ultralisk."
Yeah. Yeah, it helps a little bit in some things, like ZBZ actually is going to be the big change, because if you're playing Muta into Ultra style, then a lot of the time you'll just die to a timing when you have two Ultras out and you got a bunch more building, something like that. But most of the time, versus Terran versus Protoss, if you're going Ultras, you already have a big economy and you're not too vulnerable for a while. You get the Ultras up and then you just all die because they're slow and clunky and not that good.
I think this is a bigger change than you'd give it credit, though. I think this is huge. Like,
it's pretty big,
One of the big reasons Ultras... And I agree with you to the sense that this is not like now they're fixed and all of a sudden the Ultras is great. But a big part of the reason why the Ultras just didn't function for Zerg is that a lot of times you're stuck on a pre-Ultras army, which is Ling Infester, Roach, something, whatever, and you have 8 bases or whatever and you need to reload. Oftentimes when you reload with those Ultras, they take so damn long to get out that actually the Protoss is able to warp in, gather the mana, repair their shields, or the Terran player can get into position, that kind of stuff. But just too much happens where you have the money for this unit, you've paid for it, but the time from paying for it and actually utilizing it is so far away that it doesn't function for the Zerg. The Zerg is not an investment race. They are I'm going to lean on you and wash you with my units and you're going to die. So the Ultras was kind of weird because it was like, units, 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 and then it stops. And then, like, 7 minutes later, 8 Ultras come, like, running down the hill and just get plowed through.
Running? Jogging?
Their jaunt, whatever you want to call it.
Their jaunt.
I'm happy. I think this is a step in the right direction for that, as far as I'm concerned. If the Zerg has earned themselves the money to spend on Ultras, I feel like they should be able to use them in a Zerg way, which means fast.
Okay. A couple of things really quick, then, unless anyone has any other comments on the Ultras. I mean, I think we're just going to have to see...
The Ultra is another one of those units ported from Brood War that they did a terrible job with, because Ultras in Brood War were freaking awesome.
They just added hard counter units to every race, like Marauders and Immortals and shit.
And they decided to make it like 10 times the size.
It's cumbersome. It's the pathing. I mean,
like the amount of units in StarCraft II that can attack an Ultralisk at once versus it like getting a shot on, getting like a single swipe off is ridiculous.
Yeah,
all they do is soak damage, really.
Okay.
It can burrow and dance, though.
Yeah, which is important, dude. And one day we'll be able to buy capes for them, pain user, and it'll be all good. So
you get the Heart of the Swarm, Collector's Edition, your Ultras will have capes.
Yep.
You've heard it here first.
Yep, it's the Baneling capes that I really want, though. And control, that's all. So, the drone, and I don't even know if I can find it, but there was an additional, drone...
What?
Drone change. Fixed an issue where drone attacks could be more easily dodged than SCV or probes.
It's nice. It helps with getting down your hatchery, especially versus Protoss, or making them put down their pylon a lot faster.
Yeah.
That was like the kind of thing where if you're moving at an angle, if you continually move at an angle, the drone continually misses.
Right.
The
drone misses a lot more.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's good.
It's just evening things out. Because it's going to the same as the SCV and probe.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's good. It's been a known issue for quite some time. And there was one other thing real quickly before Raleigh. So now, when you cancel, or when a building dies and an upgrade dies with it, or you salvage something, it's now going to give a little in-game prompt that shows you return to minerals and gas.
Cool.
Yeah, I actually thought that was a pretty fucking good idea.
I mean,
the weird part is about how your opponent aesthetic. can see something, right? Like if you cancel it, then they see a little pop up in the fog of war if they're looking at it.
When a building is canceled or salvaged, the minerals returned will be displayed at the building location for the owner. For enemy players, a floating text will be displayed. I don't know what that floating text is.
If you can see that through the fog of war, that's really, really big.
That's crazy. Yeah.
What would someone the floating Twilight text be?
If it's anything that says it's canceled, that's all it matters.
Fuck you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like you see you sacrifice something in Protoss Bay, see a Twilight Council, and then it's dark, and you don't know if they're going DT or Blink, or if they cancel and they're going Robo or whatever.
Yeah, I doubt
you. Now you can see that the Twilight Council is canceled. That's huge.
No, yeah, I don't think it's well.
You don't know. You don't know that. If it displays the text, it didn't say anything about sight or Fart of War.
I mean, guys, that would be like just that could be like the dumbest thing ever.
Well, you'd have to be paying a lot of attention to their base, to be fair. You'd have to be watching.
But you can do that early game.
Yeah.
Sorry, too. It's like you can do everything through hotkeys, so.
It's true.
I'm going to have to go on the side of I'm guessing you have to have some sort of vision. And I don't even know what the text would say, like cancel, like what? I don't know, like your opponent just
refund.
Got money.
It's kind of
a
weird
yeah, like
in general. I don't know.
I mean, I like the fact because I assume from a casting perspective, boom, you know, that's cool to kind of see that, especially when you're in a situation where someone's waiting to cancel a hatchery as it's getting focus fired down. Did he kill it or did, you know, it's like you have to be paying attention to that, to the actual hatchery building as well as the minerals up top. To like pay attention to see if the you know the minerals went back if there was a cancel. So, from a broadcasting perspective, it's actually nice to go. Yes, he canceled it because I saw the fucking floating 300 minerals there. That's awesome. I can't imagine that. You know, oh, I built my pylon in the wrong place. I'm going to go ahead and cancel it. Then suddenly on the mini map, there's going to be like a little word just sitting there, like when you haven't even scouted your opponent yet. That so I believe you'll have that vision, but what it's even going to say that I don't know. That I don't know.
Sweet tactics. You could build like 7 bunkers in an obscure corner, salvage all of them,
and convince
sudden,
your opponent that you're doing
all of a sudden, your opponent's thinking to himself, what's going on over there? What is he doing? I'll tell you what. They had fake bases in Command & Conquer Red Alert.
I remember
StarCraft
that.
2. Fake bases making a return. Just wait.
Fake.
They did.
Like,
dude,
I'm going to make fake workers place. And shit, not even get the benefits of actually making the real shit.
It's going to be sick, man.
That
you
sounds
laugh,
like the worst idea ever. Especially
I just revolutionized StarCraft 2. Fake bases all over the place.
Fake construction vehicles were huge.
It does say canceled. All right. People keep on asking about the changes. Well, how about the APM fix? You guys know about it? Repeated control group and selection commands will no longer count as unique actions for APM calculation purposes.
Now my 140 APM will plummet to like 95.
And people are going to be like, has In Control gotten worse in the last 3 months? I've noticed this APM is significantly decreased without actually knowing that the change was in the patch notes. Yeah.
They should actually,
I could care less. If anything, it shows a more accurate EAPM. So whatever. It's fine.
Just can't believe people still talk about APM.
Yeah, who cares?
It's important, Jeff. It's important.
I watched Fisheye go to the grand finals of the World Cyber Games with 90 APM in Brood War, man. Played against Ogo.
That's how you said his name?
Whatever. Never said it out loud. How do you say it? Ogo.
That was the first Ogo. Time, dude.
Ogo. Ogo. Ogo.
Whatever.
I remember that guy.
Fisheye PG.
All right. Let's talk about MLG, guys, and we'll finish the show off with this. We're probably not going to get to any phone calls today, which is a little crazy. Normally we do.
Well, we might have to take one.
What? I mean, I don't know, man. We don't even have that much time left, so we'll see, even though my Chrome just locked up. Awesome. MLG Raleigh, paying user, congratulations.
Thanks,
32nd place. Yeah. Yep. In fact, we've got all the rankings right here, fresh from the Team Liquid coverage site, which is very well done. Thank you, guys. It helps out a ton. And we see Pain User down here, 32. No one under 30 or 32, so he got his up there. And Control clocking in 22. And Ibram at 20. And, I mean, certainly I have to start with Greg because, Greg, this is probably, it's probably the worst that you've had in terms of results in an MLG. Is that accurate?
The one where I lost to Nazgul and Select might have been worse, but last year. Okay. I don't know.
Okay. Well, tell me about it. What'd you think of your performance?
I don't know. It fucking sucked. I went into it feeling like I was playing well, and I practiced a lot, and then I just lost.
All right. Jeff, how about your performance?
Well, I mean, this was obviously another tough MLG for me. The one previous was not much better. I won one more game in the group play, rather. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what it takes for myself, because I definitely practiced a lot more for this MLG, I think, than any other one before, but it's, again, one of my worst performances, and certainly to a certain extent, to a huge extent, that is because I'm facing much, much more difficult players. The MLG now and the MLG, you know, and any in the past except for maybe Anaheim, are far and away different beasts. These are harder, harder tournaments each time. More Koreans, better foreigners, more people taking it serious. So the stress, the pressure, everything just kind of keeps going higher and higher. But it sucked for me in particular, because actually in each series against these world-class players, Coca, undefeated ZVP and GSL, I had him on Shakira's Plateau. In fact, the Koreans leaned into each other and said, wow, Coca's dead here. There's no way to win from here. Milkus told me that he translated that for me. They were talking about that. And then, of course, I went on to make a blunderous mistake and not move my Colossus out of the range of the Roaches, and they got sniped, and then the game started falling apart before me. So that sucked. I had Huck on the ropes. My pylon was one pixel outside of warping into his up into his base when he was going blink. Or no, he was going DT that game. So he dies there.
You're talking about the game on Shattered?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. I thought you had that. Greg and I were watching that behind you. We were just like, oh.
I did have it. It was just terrible. Kind of folding under my own pressure. And Naniwa, I missed a volley on Tal'Darm Altar. We both did the same build, except for mine is defensive, so I should have had the advantage. But he was able to get one extra shot off with the full round of Stalkers, which is more than it. I mean, that's all you need when it's that close in a PvP. And then Rain, I had 3 base versus 2. TriMaster, it's probably going to haunt me forever, but like when a Protoss kicks in the door of a Terran player and literally he's got like 3 Marines, that's all he has, the one thing you don't do is go antagonize his SCVs. Like, just sit where you are and kill everything and allow the force fields to be defensive for you in his production line. But I didn't do that, and it's a huge mistake, and I lost my army. And then in the next game, I didn't run past his bunker and just sit on his mineral line and win. So the nice thing for me is I look at each of these series, and I'm talking Huck, Naniwa, Coca, Rain, TriMaster. And these aren't like players that I should be beating all the time, right? These are really, really freaking good players. So for me to look at each series and say, here's a point in time where I could have beat them and I should have, but I made some big mistakes, it's comforting for me to be able to recognize that and say, in the future, hopefully I'm a better player so that I can sit in that same situation, make the right choice. And then instead of lamenting to you guys why I had a terrible tournament, we're talking about where the fuck did In Control come from and how did he, you know, do so well in that group that is filled with world-class players.
Okay. Let me ask Pain User, and then I've got a couple questions for all of you. Now, unfortunately, I didn't see every single match of the tournament, which is a little bit unusual because obviously usually I'm casting or at least have some sort of idea. Pain User, yeah. You did much better this time around. You know, I know that you were at least attempting to put together a practice schedule. Do you see yourself continuing with all this?
Well, of course. I mean, as long as I can still compete. And I had a completely opposite experience from Greg and Jeff. I didn't put in that much time at all, and I went into it with a very carefree attitude, and I didn't have a lot of the nerves that I usually have, and I was just kind of playing how I always play. And I think my results reflect that, because obviously I didn't play as high as either of them. So for me, if anything, it was just a really encouraging MLG. If I put in more time and more effort and start playing with some of my buddies again that I used to practice with a lot, I think I could do a lot better than I did. So for me, it was really encouraging. I lost a super close nail biter to O'Reilly, a Belgian Zerg player from the beta in the championship bracket. And a lot of it just had to do with my macro slipping and poor mechanics and stuff like that. Just really unrefined play on my part. But I felt like my overall scope of the game and strategy was all there, and I think that really helped pull me through.
Okay, I want to ask about some specific matches. The elimination match for you, Greg, was versus TriMaster. It was a 2-1 series. Tell me a little bit about that one. It was a ZVT. I know that a match that you're not super thrilled about to begin with, but, you know, talk to me a little bit about that series, because I think that generally people are saying that this was kind of TriMaster's breakthrough tournament, kind of came out of nowhere. But I'd love to hear, you know, firsthand.
You asked Peña that, right?
I asked Greg that.
Oh, Greg?
Yeah.
He asked you about TriMaster. Oh, Greg's having trouble getting back on the call, I guess.
Oh.
I can talk about it, though.
Talk about it.
TriMaster is a local celebrity from Texas, I believe. He was, like, kind of raised up in that community. I know that Reddit, he's originated from the Reddit community. He's one of the guys who was a part of their Invitational and did really, really well for them, if I'm not mistaken. And then he was actually a Cats, like, hand selection recruit to Complexity. So he's kind of ascended to the highest levels of foreign pro gaming. And for him to come out to this tournament and be the only Westerner to make it out of group play, from the winner bracket, is hugely impressive. And then to beat the people he did, he had a great series against Huck, you know, took the series against Idra, and sat down in our group and did quite well for himself as well. Is hugely impressive. So he's actually one of the most mannered people you can ever meet, too. You're not going to have anyone, I guarantee it, no one's going to come in here and say, well, actually, TriMaster's a huge douchebag. I hate the guy. Or there's that one time he said that really jerk thing. No, he's actually like the nicest guy in the world, and he just tries really hard.
Okay. I mean, I haven't seen all the games as far as that's concerned, but you know, definitely interesting to see new talent out there. Since Greg's no longer on there, you know, one of the things I kind of wanted to ask him was just basically whether or not he was, you know, expecting to see that sort of talent out of TriMaster. It's got to be more difficult playing against an opponent that you haven't seen a lot of, that you don't know what they like to do and what they might abuse against you, et cetera, et cetera. So,
I could tell you how Greg would answer that, but I'll let him do it.
Is Greg back on?
No. Have you called him?
No, I mean, it shows that everyone's on the call. Are you here, Pain User? It's just you and me, Jeff.
That's cool, man. This Skype figured out what we need. Just you and me, buddy.
I don't know.
The cameras are froze on Skype, too. I know.
Yeah,
that.
All the cams are froze, but it still shows that both Peña's are in Idra are in the call. But, I mean, you and I are still talking, so I'm not quite sure what kind of voodoo magic is going on here.
Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know. Are they even here?
I mean, Greg's here. He's still in the house.
Can he see the chat that I'm sending out? I swear to God, man. Skype.
Can you see the chat at all, Greg, or anything? You can see the chat? Yeah, he sees the chat.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's the end of the show anyway, but I feel terrible that we left it, like, with that question on there. I don't know what to do in control. I'm panicking right now.
You know?
Is my cam working to you?
No.
Oh, it's frozen?
Okay. No. Yeah, on the call? No.
Yeah, okay. Well, shit. I'll just noodle everyone. Maybe restart this. I'll just, I just called Idra back. We'll see if it does anything. Anything else, Jeff, as far as the event? That now, it seemed like it was a little bit, It was a little bit thinner, and I'm guessing that has to do with the actual hurricane itself.
Well, I mean, there's the hurricane, but then even talking to the MLG guys while we were there, they kind of realized running an event 1 month after the other one was probably not a good idea. They were all exhausted. The people were kind of exhausted. There's like a there's a concept like even observing fatigue that exists. You know, if you just watch too much stuff, then you're going to kind of run dry. So this was one of their smaller events, but it still had that excitement. Raleigh turned out great. The people, the town of Raleigh, they love the game, and they, you know, it's not like we had standing room or there's chairs or like empty chairs or anything like that. Nope, still jam-packed, still exciting. I think the stream did okay. Considering what could have happened, a storm could have knocked the power out to the whole town. We wouldn't have had an MLG, and like dozens of teams would have lost money sending their players to this event that now doesn't matter. I'm pretty happy with the event.
Excellent. Well, I mean, I really wish I could have been there, but obviously could not. PAX was fun.
Yeah, I think we're done. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have no fucking clue what Skype piece of shit. Oh my God, my F4 key just popped off. No, actually, it was my control key.
But, nice.
Yeah, and my shift key. Because I hate Skype. Piece of shit. Fucking. Sorry. Well, Jeff, I guess we can close out the show, man.
Sounds good.
Have any words of wisdom that you want to, you know, drop on all the folks out there before we depart?
No, just thanks to everyone that came out to Raleigh, as always. I mean, I think that in conjunction with the Barcraft stuff that's going on right now, it's like the most uniquely awesome opportunity for people who are never going to be a pro gamer, who are never going to be on a team, never write for an organization, nothing like that, to actually get out there and actively help grow this game in our community. Like to go to a bar and talk passionately about StarCraft with friends, to attend an MLG event or pay for their subscription, to do those little things like that to help grow the reach of this game. It takes bodies, it takes people, and I think that's pretty freaking cool that we've been able to do that to this degree, and hopefully more people can do it in the future as well. And just as always, you know, just to put it out there, I am not in the least bit happy with my performance in MLG, obviously. When I talk about how I could have won each series, it's for me to document to you guys that I'm, despite terrible results, on the verge of being a very, very good player, and I'm kind of holding my chin up and telling myself that and working towards that goal because that's what I want and that's what I'm going to do. So hopefully Orlando and Providence and everything after that and everything in between, you'll see a much more refined and practiced and level-headed in control as opposed to a guy who's making really bad mistakes. So that's my goal, and for those that are going to support me and join me on that journey, I thank you. And for the haters, appreciate you guys as well, because everyone needs motivation, and I need all the motivation I can get. So thank you to everyone.
Right on, dude. Right on. Well, you know, and if it makes you feel any better, we even saw the runner-up for Code A, GSL, like pretty much lose everything that he had worked for with just a single mistake. And I mean, you could just see like the frustration and sort of the knowledge of what had just happened, and that's a that's a difficult thing. I mean, even some of the best players, the almost champs, like everyone has these periods where they make mistakes, and you know, maybe the best is being able to completely alleviate that out of your game. But I really do hope that the training house is the next step for you guys, you know, and I hope that beyond practicing, it is training. And I really look forward to talking to you guys a little bit more about that. Yes, we will be back with more Inside the Game next week. Tomorrow is Live on 3. And even though Pinus is not here now, I will be rejoining with him, because coming up next after this for the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup is EG versus Fnatic. I actually cannot wait for this matchup. I think it'll be phenomenal. So make sure that you are tuning into that. It'll be very, very soon here on OneMoreGame.tv. In Control, thank you very much. Sorry I couldn't see you this weekend. I was holding it down on the West Coast, though. And yeah,
man, spread that love, dude. Yep. Spread that love.
Exactly. We got to do it.
Everyone, so. Check out the videos, too. Idra and I did an interview with Anna. And also Puma did a winner's interview with the Muslim translating. And you can follow Puma at EG Puma on Twitter, so do that. He's starting to speak more English. I think if more people speak English to him and then he speaks English back at them, we'll soon have an English-speaking Puma. And he actually is quite hilarious. Like, genuinely funny guy. Yeah, he's actually really funny.
I cannot wait. Also, don't forget, since they're not here, let me do it for them. Make sure you're checking out Pain User over at IGN. You can go to IGN.com/IPL. You can follow them on Twitter at Pain User. You can follow Idra on Twitter at IdraJIT. And, of course, you can follow In Control at EG In Control. You can follow me at DJ Wheat, the show at ITG_SC2. And with that being said, guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of Inside the Game. Coming up next is the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. It is week 3, day 2. And we'll see you in just a few moments for that. Thanks for tuning in to onemoregame.tv. And we'll see you next time. Peace.